Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Pastor Maluleke, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Zamile Malote.
Yes, sir.
How are you today?
Very well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. No complaints. Thank you.
Yeah, lovely. Now, people know that you don't know me from yesterday, eh?
Yeah.
People who call me by that name, they, you know that, no, we didn't meet yesterday.
Yeah.
We know each other. Fanduga af from a very long time ago. Now, we continue to talk about the compatibility or lack thereof between science and faith. And we want to look at how, if science can have an impact on one's faith and understanding of God and his power. So, Mfundisi, when we look at instances such as the parting of the Red Sea, for instance, you know, Jesus and Peter walking on water, another example, or people rising from the dead at the resurrection of Christ, and many other examples, what do these accounts tell us about God's power? And what is that even, are these scientifically possible, actually?
Yes, that's a very good question, because we need to come back to the fundamental question of who is God and how does he present himself to us? Because when Moses asks, when I go to your children and ask, who are you? What is your name? Mm. What will I say? And God says, say to them, I am who I am. And that I am means he is the self-existent first cause of all things. He is transcendent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he is the creator. He's the creator of creation. He's not part of that creation. He's not subject to the creation that he has created.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, I summarized it by saying, when he, in Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, when he says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. We are talking about time, which has got the past, present, and future aspects. We are talking about matter. Liquid, solid, and gas. We are talking about space, length, and breadth, and height. And God himself is a trinity. So there are trinities there. So when God, in all these miracles, God is manipulating matter. He's manipulating space. He's manipulating time. And also we can talk about the miracles where Jesus exorcised demons, and to show that even they are not subject to him. Nature is not subject to him. When he said peace, be still, you know, the sea became calm. He was able to walk on water. He parted the Red Sea. At some point, Joshua prayed. Now, this has to do with time. And, you know, in the field of astronomy, Joshua was fighting a battle, and he says to God in Joshua chapter 10, verses 12 to 14, can you please stop the sun until I finish this battle, until I win? And then he says, sun, stand still, moon, don't move. And I explained this yesterday to say, someone will say, you see, the Bible is not compatible with science. But when you say sun stop, it's because of the language that we even use today, that the sun rises, the sun sets. So when you say sun stop, it's just language, it's not science. So, but God is not limited by the creation that he created. So he's in charge of water, even fire. You know, Daniel chapter 3, he finds Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego thrown into fire. He gets in there, and he's not subject to it. It doesn't burn his people. And so I'm simply saying the Bible simply presents God as the great I am, who is self-existent, who is not limited by anything. So we can say, you know, somebody says in astronomy, he says, I'm the sun of righteousness with healing in his wings. There is the sun that we see, that our earth revolves around, but Jesus himself is the sun. In biology, Jesus himself was born without a normal conception, which defied science, because he was conceived through the Holy Spirit. In chemistry, he turned water into wine. I can go on and on, but God is above science and our academic limitations and definitions of things. You know, we can say to a medical doctor, he healed all kinds of diseases without administering a drug. Can we say today we'll say, no, we need drugs. Jesus healed injuries, diseases without administering a drug. Maybe at one point in John chapter 9, he says to a man born blind, he, after putting saliva on his eyes, go to the pool of Siloam and wash your eyes. So sometimes he used nature to cooperate with him when healing people. Also, soil has healing properties.
Yep.
He used saliva, soil, and then he says, go to the pool of Siloam. But so I'm simply saying nature is subject to him. You know, we can go to many fields of study. You know, even in gynecology, he heals a woman who had been hemorrhaging for 12 years. He had gone to physicians. Mm-hmm. He had spent all the money. It's like today, people still go to doctors. They spend a lot of money. They come out not healed. There are many testimonies of people who said the doctor had given me 3 months to live or 6 months to live. I left the medication. I prayed to God. I adjusted my life, you know, to the will of God. And my life itself is a miracle. Mm-hmm. You know, so in geology, he says, I'm the rock of ages.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm saying we can go on and on. In economics, he multiplies 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish to feed over 5,000 people. And he defies what in economics we call the law of diminishing returns. He defies that. In physics, he ascended to heaven, defying the law of gravity. So the simple thing is that science, God is not subject to the creation that he has created. And if we understand that, science can be used to understand the creation itself. But we will have limitations in terms of understanding, thinking that science will make us fully comprehend God. Science can help us, but it cannot help us to analyze, evaluate, and fully comprehend God, his beginning and his ending, because then he will cease to be God. So some of these things are very scientifically possible. What is impossible with man is possible with God, because God is not subject to his creation. And that's why when they, after they had crossed the Red Sea, because the question here is also about the Red Sea, when the people of Canaan hear that this God of the Israelites has opened the Red Sea for them, and the Egyptians, who were the most powerful nation of that time, militarily, intellectually, and culturally, and in many other ways, they drowned in the Red Sea. We can say even their science maybe was advanced at that time. They were the most powerful nation. And the woman called Rahab, who was a prostitute in Canaan, when Joshua sends the spies, he says, we have heard that your God has opened the Red Sea for you. And your God is God in heaven above and on earth beneath. And that's why that woman is the only woman except Sarah that he's named in Hebrews chapter 11 for her faith. When James writes the book of James and he says faith must have works, he talks about Abraham as the first example. And the second example, he names Rahab, you know, for her faith. So she was an outsider to the faith of the Israelites. And that is what God always, his miracles are intended to show people that he is above the nature that he has created. I can give many examples, you know, with Jonah, who was running away from God, and how God will cause nature and bend it towards the fulfillment of his will. So simply put, God is not subject to nature, and he's able to bend the laws even of nature to fulfill his will. He's not limited.
That's powerful.
What is scientifically impossible with man is possible with God.
Beautiful. You've also attended to the next question I would have asked you, if science can deepen a person's understanding of God's power. Now, where do faith and science deviate from one another when it comes to explaining the way the world works?
I think they deviate when it comes to the assumptions. Let me start by saying, when we say science and faith, science is a good word. Science is about knowledge, and so it's therefore neutral. But how we want to make constructions about it and make assumptions, let me just say the academic scientific world these days, yes, it kind of deviates from our understanding of God's power, because it does not recognize him. It does not recognize his presence. So there was a big bang, And then there was an organic inorganic world, in the sense that geologically there were rocks, there was the earth, there were scientific bodies, but also organically there are plants, and then there are animals, and then there's life. Now, the deviation here is that between science and, and the Bible is that those who understand God, they say God is the source of organic life, inorganic life, I mean organic matter, inorganic matter, and also life. And also some transitions. You know, the Bible will say God said, let there be, and there was. And he created, you know, sea life, fish and all these other things that we find there. He created, you know, birds or aviation. He created, you know, terrestrial animals. And, you know, he said, let them reproduce after their kind. So that, but the deviation will be that science's assumption is that life originated with lower forms like an amoeba. And then from there, there was so much deviation that there were plants. And there were animals. And when we talk about plants, you know, there's diversity, they're flowering and non-flowering. With animals, we'll talk about, you know, mammals and fish, all these different kinds, those with a vertebra and those without a vertebra. And there's so much diversity that we do not find species in transition. There's no human today. You know, we do not find species in transition, but science today, as we know it in evolution, will want to convince us that life started in lower forms, and this diversity here started from lower forms, and we're not seeing it even today. You know, Darwin, who wrote the book, what is that book called that he wrote about
Charles Darwin evolution?
I read that book, and you know, he observed some birds and how over time they had developed stronger, longer beaks, and he said that's evolution. But science these days, in the subject of epigenetics, shows us that we have genes that can be switched on and off. Depending on the external circumstances. So you may have things within you that are not operational, but external conditions may cause those genes to be turned on without long periods of time passing on in order to enable certain species to survive certain conditions. I think in Professor Walter Weiss, who was a geologist himself, he studied also the time frames, you know, that after the flood, science will say these were long periods of time, which does deviate from the short periods of time that we get in the Bible, given the ages that are given there. People like Walter White have said, no, the fossils are a result of the flood because many animals died. And he has proven that some of the periods that are said to be long, they can actually be contracted to short periods of time. So there's deviation in terms of understanding and the methods of calculating the time frames. So there's deviation in terms of that understanding the time. But I'm simply saying, yes, academic science as it is today follows evolution. And that we have evolved from lower forms, and the diversity has, you know, life has diversified over time. Yes, but Christians or the Word of God and God will simply say, but who created life? You know, and why can't we be able to reproduce life today? It's a miracle. Where does life come from? But the book of John says about Jesus, in him was life. And the life was the light of men. And the Desire of Ages, the book by Ellen White, says, in him was life, original, underived, unborrowed. And this goes back to the I am who I am. And when Jesus comes to the book of John, he says, I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. I am the resurrection and the life. You know, so I am the way, the truth, and the life. I have life within me. And, you know, one of his most potent miracles was to resurrect Lazarus, who had been in the grave for more than 3 days on the fourth day. And that was to show that he himself was divine. So the miracles are there to show that God is divine. And if there are deviations, it's because, yes, academically, today, science follows the path of evolution, but there are scientists who do not believe in that. And through them, you know, we can learn a lot of things. There are scientists and physicists in energy who have learned even the power of the atom, why we are able to create an atomic bomb, to show that there's a lot that we can learn. And even Jesus himself used science to illustrate some spiritual truths when he says, when we throw a seed to the ground, it must die first.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if it does not die, it will not be able to reproduce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there's energy in there, but it needs to die first so that it can be able to reproduce. But he was illustrating a spiritual truth that he who is life, original, underived, unborrowed, in order to save the world, he needs to die so that we may live. And so clearly there are deviations between mainstream science, but there are scientists who are not agreeing with that as well, because science itself has limitations. It does not tell us how, it cannot fully explain the concept of life. Even I used to teach as a missionary in Korea, and you find many smart people there who will say, I don't believe in God, I believe in myself. But one man says, I don't have any religion, I'm an atheist. But when my son was born, I began to think about God. And it made me think about the miracle of life. So miracles are not only things that we consider, the opening of the Red Sea, Jesus with the three Hebrew boys in the fire, the life itself, the birth of a child. Those are common things that happen every day. The crops that we put into the soil and they germinate, those are miracles in themselves. That we never acknowledge. But God has created all these things. And if you look into the Old Testament, can I go quickly to 1 Kings chapter 18? You know, because people were not believing in God. They were believing in the sun as a God. They were believing in Baal and Ashtoreth, you know, sun worship and moon worship, and believing that these have power to fertilize their vegetation. And that's why they believed in them. And so when Elijah challenges the prophet of Baal, and that happens after 3.5 years of famine, because God says there will simply be no rain. But because they believed in Baal and Ashtoreth as the providers of rain to fertilize their crops, God stopped that. And immediately after Elijah challenged them, there was fire from heaven to swallow the sacrifices that they had put there. And then immediately afterwards, there was rain, because God was saying, I can provide rain regardless of what you believe in. Yeah. I am in charge of these things. Deviations are there, but God is not subject to them. We cannot put him under a microscope or take him to court and try to evaluate him and judge him based on his creation.
True, very true. Agree with you there. Now, the last one before I let you go, Mfundis, how can churches foster discussions about science without creating a division? I mean, we've seen it can be a very big hot potato, this topic, and some callers get very hot. Is there a way that churches can foster these discussions about science and faith without really creating any divisions?
Yes, we can if we have mature leadership, and because we already have resources in the Geoscience Research Council. There are many articles there. There are many in the website, Amazing Discoveries. That is, you will find Professor Walter Veit's presentations there. There are things that we can already take and just read an article and create some discussion questions and discuss openly. But I think we sometimes lack leadership that is not open-minded enough to engage. They think if you are asking a question or if you have questions about something, it means you have already fallen or you are rebellious. But we need to have questions because, in fact, you know, going to the seminary is the most dangerous thing one can do. Because there we meet professors who are open-minded enough to allow discussions and questions. And that's why you may have ministers who come out of the seminary sometimes, you may say, weaker in faith, because we need to explore
all possibilities. We need to
explore these subjects. Even, you know, I studied systematic theology and specifically the Word of God and also, you know, creation. And there are so many theories, and some of them are compelling, but we need to engage so that we know for sure what is it that we believe, because we must not be afraid to challenge out of fear that which we do not know, because we think we will be, what is the word, our faith will be weakened. We need to be strong so that we may be able to give answers. You know, Paul says you must be able to give an answer and the reason for your faith. And if people have questions and we are going to bury our heads in the sand, is not going to achieve. So I'm simply saying we have resources in the Geoscience Research Council. We have resources also, I mean, our fundamental beliefs. If you just go to the one of creation, there's a lot there that we can discuss. So I'm simply saying leaders must be open-minded. We are not on the same level of spiritual growth and intellectual growth, but those who are mature and those who, you know, they need to know they are children. They are people, even though they are adults, they come into the faith late in life, they may still have questions. We need to be able to handle debates and arguments and questions that people pose and give the best answers that we can give. When we don't have answers, we must go and research, because some answers are there. There are people like David Eshrick. They have tried to study some subjects and they have presentations, and sometimes you don't even have to answer. You can just say, today for the afternoon program, we're just going to listen to this presentation by Pastor David Eshrick and see how to answer some of the questions that people have. Because there are answers. I talked about the anthropic principle yesterday, that, you know, the distance of the earth from the sun, you know, had it been closer, there would be no life. We can talk about the balance of you know, minerals like what do we call them? Nitrogen, oxygen, carbon dioxide. That had there been just a slight imbalance, life wouldn't have been possible. So we are able to give educated, intelligent answers to people. It's possible, but we need to be open-minded. We need to be informed ourselves, because when we are informed and empowered ourselves, we will not be afraid. Will not shut discussion. But if we are not, we create an environment where people cannot question, and therefore they cannot grow, and therefore they cannot give a reason for their faith.
Beautiful and mouthful. Thank you so much, Pastor. We will connect with you again tomorrow, same time and same place. I think it's a very interesting topic, actually, and you've you know, unpacked it so beautifully for us this afternoon. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Malote. Have a good rest of the afternoon.
Blessings to you. Thanks.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.